We learn more about the Earth's oceans all the time, which is a good thing since they cover so much of the planet. But for reasons you'll soon hear, the oceans guard many of their secrets very well. Those are secrets the Ocean Observatories Initiative are determined to reveal. The initiative includes sensor arrays deployed off the east and west coasts of North America, including the just-completed Endurance Array in the Pacific. A crew from Oregon State University placed the final sensor a few weeks ago. From the Ocean Observatory Initiative, both are oceanography professors at Oregon State University. We have Jack Barth, project scientist on the Endurance Array. Welcome, Jack.
Good morning, Jeff.
And Ed Devers with us as well, who's the project manager. Welcome, Ed.
Good morning.
So, gentlemen, what is the purpose of the Ocean Observatories Initiative, and how did it start?
You said it really well, Jeff. It's our new set of eyes on the ocean, and we know things are changing out there, and we really haven't had this chance to put these arrays of sensors out and keep them in place. It's the idea is to be there all the time and be able to see events happen as they unfold. And we'll get into that a little bit, the different kinds of changes in the ocean we're seeing. But the initiative and the array has been about 10 years in the making, and we're just getting it done now.
And give us a description of the arrays and how they're supposed to work.
Sure. So, you know, ideally what we want is omniscience, right? We'd like to know everything, everywhere, all the time. But we're stuck with different types of measurement technologies that'll get us one thing but not another. So, for example, we have fixed sensors at one location that can get us very high time resolution, and those are things that are on oceanographic moorings, including meteorological sensors, sensors in the water column that measure things like temperature, salinity, chlorophyll, oxygen, and sensors that are cabled on the seabed that measure things like seismological variability, earthquakes, noises at the seafloor, et cetera, cameras on the seabed. And then we have other instruments that travel through the water column. So these are called ocean gliders, and they can move up and down by changing their buoyancy relative to seawater, and they measure some of the same water properties that are measured on fixed oceanographic moorings.
Are the gliders attached to anything, or are they just free agents?
They're freestanding, and they're programmed from land. They call in several times a day, and you can download the data, you can update where they're going, and task them to look at different features and whatnot.
Did you guys have a celebration of some kind when the last sensor was placed?
It was pretty low-key. You know, it's been, I'd say it's been something of a gradual start, a slow start. So, you know, it was a gradual process of putting these things in, testing them, and then putting the next set of things in. And right now, even though the sensor arrays are all out there, we're still getting the data back and doing initial quality control before we let it loose on the science and the public, so to speak.
I was going to ask you how long a period of calibration you might have. It sounds like there's a bunch of things you need to do first to make sure you're getting the stuff you want and not getting noise.
Yeah, exactly. So these sensors that Ed was just describing have been put out over the last year and turned on, and we get the data back either through this seafloor cable that connects right to the internet onshore, or we get it the data back through a satellite link, and it comes into our lab, and we want to look at it right away, see if it's giving us the right numbers. So we're in this verification phase now. We want to make sure things are looking good, all the data is flowing, and then we're going to open it up, and the data will be available to everybody.
We're talking about the Ocean Observatory Initiative, which involves placing sensors in the oceans to find out what's going on out there and a bunch of different things. We'll find out what those things are in just a moment. Jack Barth is the project scientist on the Endurance Array. Ed Dever is the project manager. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about the oceans. 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Jack, I mean, how interesting a time in history is this to be monitoring oceans? Not that there ever was a dull one, I suppose.
I think at this last few years, and you just mentioned the weather report, you know, how unusual is this last winter and this summer? And these are things that are very much influenced by the ocean. The upper part of the ocean contains a lot of the heat on our planet, and it exchanges that heat with the atmosphere. So as it does that, it changes the weather from day to day, especially off Oregon as things roll in off the Pacific. It also changes the climate, that more slowly varying changes in temperature. So what we saw this last winter was a extra warm surface layer in the ocean. And we were able to see that from satellite. We can see it from the Ocean Observatory's initiative sensors. And it's pretty awesome. It extended from up in the Gulf of Alaska, off of Canada, down along our shores, all along the West Coast. And you can think of that massive blanket of warm water, you know, actually heating or keeping the atmosphere warm. And then that rolls in across the continent and changes things. That's exactly the kind of thing we're trying to watch with the Ocean Observatory's array.
Is that the blob you're talking about, the famous blob, Jack?
Yeah, exactly. We've heard about it called the blob, and we're really able with this new array to watch it evolve. And Ed and I are both physicists. We're physical oceanographers, but we're intensely interested in the ecosystems out there. And the sensors we have are meant to measure not only the physics, the temperature and salinity, but also the chemistry, things like the amount of oxygen in the water or the amount of nutrients available, all the way through some of the biological properties like the chlorophyll, just the plankton that are out there. So we can start with something like the warm blob and see how it sort of ripples through the ecosystem. Does it change the chlorophyll content? Does it change the oxygen, that kind of thing?
And Ed, when we talk about the biological stuff, I'm just curious to know if the sensors also pick up information like, you know, there are large schools of orcas going past this sensor at a moment or something that unique to the circumstances around it.
Oh, yeah. So as Jack mentioned, you know, there's sensors that go all the way up from chemistry up to properties like chlorophyll, but then we also have both passive hydrophones that can pick up both man-made and biological noises at a very high degree of sensitivity, as well as active acoustic sensors. So essentially high-tech fish finders that you can look at different frequency ranges. Those different frequency ranges respond to different size animals in the water column, up from very small copepods up through small fishes, for example. So we can look at a number of different things. You know, if a fish or a marine mammal has a tag in it, for example, an acoustic tag, we can pick up that tag as it goes by. We're trying to really do a pretty comprehensive job measuring everything from geological processes on the seafloor all the way up through those kind of interesting biological things that you talked about.
Well, the geological processes then, and since there's been so much talk since that New Yorker article about the Cascadia subduction zone, which is good, people are talking about it again, is there a chance we could get a slightly earlier than anticipated warning of movement along the fault line given the new sensor array?
The answer is yes. So in addition to the moorings and the gliders that Ed talked about that are located fairly close to shore in shallow water, say 300-400 feet of water and on in. We also have in the Ocean Observatory's initiative what we call the cabled array. These are sensors that are hooked to an actual cable that has a fiber optic data channel and copper wires to give power. And at the end of those cables are these seismometers that Ed mentioned that measure the ground motion very super accurately. And they're placed at a few locations offshore, including all the way down to full ocean depth, so 3,000, 3,500 meters. And they're sitting in areas of interest to us geologically. So as that seismometer detects the ground shake, that gets sent to shore and can be part of, you know, how we learned quickly about this event.
We're talking about the Ocean Observatory's initiative on the Jefferson Exchange with Jack Barth and Ed Deaver, both scientists at Oregon State University, both involved with the Ocean Observatory's initiative. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone or jx@jeffnet.org by email. Here's Joseph and Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Jack and Ed.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I wanted to know... Okay, the correlation between the land surface mass, the ocean depths, and if there was a connection between the specific elevation points in Oregon and the West Coast and the depths of the ocean and specific estuary points, both ocean estuaries and atmospheric estuaries.
To seek what information? What's the basic thrust here, Joseph?
If there was a connection between these measuring devices in the ocean and measuring devices on the land.
So there's definitely a strong connection between some of the processes that go on in estuaries and some of the processes that we see in the ocean. And that's one of the reasons that we located a significant part of the Endurance Array directly off of Newport. So we can look at the relationship between what's going on in the Aquinnah Bay estuary with what's going on in the coastal ocean. And so, for example, in the summertime, we see upwelling, which brings really cold, salty, nutrient-rich water to the surface in the coastal ocean. And some of that water then gets into the estuary as well and can serve to help fertilize the estuary. And conversely, in the wintertime, when we see strong rainfall in the Coast Range or rainfall throughout the Cascades, it gets caught up in the Columbia, we can see the effect of the rivers on the coastal ocean. We can see the relatively low salinity water, the sediment that's introduced from the estuary, from that estuary into the ocean. So there's definitely strong exchange at the ocean level between the local estuaries and the coastal ocean. And there's also a strong degree of correlation between the atmospheric processes that are happening over land and the atmospheric processes in the ocean. So many times, sometimes the hotter and more miserable it is on land, it can actually be a little bit cooler in the ocean because as that land heats up, there's a low pressure system during the day over the land. There can be higher pressure in the summer over the water that drives a pretty strong wind over the coastal ocean. And that's why, to look back to Mark Twain, right, his famous saying, the coldest winter I ever spent was a summer in San Francisco. That's what he was talking about, was that cold wind blowing over the ocean at the same time as you have very warm air further inland.
Ed, are land-based sensors actually incorporated into and therefore available along with the data you get from the Endurance Array, or do you have to just sort of take the stuff you get from your sensors and compare it with land-based information?
It's more the latter. So, one of the things that we've learned over the last 25 or 30 years with ocean sensors is the data is too valuable to just hold it to yourself. So all the data that we're taking, from our meteorological buoys, for example, will be incorporated into the NOAA network, which includes land-based sensors as well as ocean-based sensors. And so, we do a good job coordinating the data that we're taking with land-based data, but the data that we're taking as part of the Ocean Observatory's initiative is all on top of the ocean, in the water column, or on the seabed.
And I haven't asked yet how many different sensors there are in the Endurance Array. There must be a fabulous number, and they all, they do lots of different things.
Yeah, I believe there's something on the order of, it's pretty close to 50 different types of sensors.
Wow. 50 types, and then how many individual placements?
Oh, gosh, it's
several hundred.
Several hundred, yeah.
It's busy.
Can they be updated as tech improves, as it seems to frequently lately?
Yeah, you put out these sensors and platforms in the ocean, which is a very challenging environment, right? It's seawater, so it's corrosive. If you go down to the seafloor, you've got those high pressures. So we have to turn them around and service them every 6 months at least, maybe even more frequently, certainly for the underwater robots, the gliders. The other thing is the biological growth that forms on the sensor faces.
Oh,
so
right.
We're continuously looking for improvements in both how we deploy the sensors and the sensors themselves. And I'll just mention there was a very famous competition that was just completed called the XPRIZE for a pH sensor that could be more easily deployed in the ocean. So there are companies and inventors and all sorts of people interested in the tech side, and we want to bring that stuff onto the array as we improve it.
We're talking to Jack Barth and Ed Deaver from the Ocean Observatories Initiative. Both are oceanography professors at Oregon State University. You can join our discussion on the exchange at 800-838-3760 anywhere in the listening area by email jx@jeffnet.org. Here is Ryan in Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Well, good morning, gentlemen. What a great conversation. You know, so I'm trying to wrap my brain around, you know, just how big the ocean is. And as you're talking about data collection and kind of a fine scale, and I'm aware of the issues, you know, of trying to put that together into a big picture. And I was wondering, what's the role of kind of the computer data visualization technology to help us put together models and forecasts of all the data set that you're collecting?
All right. Thanks for the question, Ryan. Appreciate that. Jack, you want to take that on?
Sure. Yeah. Thanks, Ryan. So you're absolutely right. The networks are measurements in single places, but we use those, as Ed mentioned, to feed into, say, the NOAA weather forecast system. So we collect all those bits of information. It might be from our sensors. It might be from ships. It might be from satellites. And those are blended together with these numerical models. And the models exist for both the atmosphere as well as the ocean. They're both fluids. We understand the basic fluid dynamics, and we can program that on a computer. And it's really been a revolution in the last, same 20 or 25 years, where the computers are fast enough, we have lots of memory, that we can run very, what we call high spatial resolution. So you've got a prediction at a place in the ocean less than a kilometer. And we're talking, you know, thousands of kilometers across the Pacific, but we can model that very well with the computers now. And the data we're collecting goes into that system when we can mine the data for some of the questions that we're interested as far as changes in the ocean.
Go ahead. Are there any trade-offs here? I mean, are there some things that the sensors are not monitoring that you wish they could have been monitoring?
Oh, sure. I'll take that one. And one example is we have fixed sensors about a mile off the coast of Oregon and off of Washington, and then another set of fixed sensors about 10 miles off, and then a third set of sensors about 30 miles off. And the ones that are close to the coast that are only about a mile off, those are actually at the edge of where wind and wave processes are important. And so they're in 25 meters water depth, or, you know, roughly the equivalent of 85 or 80 to 85 feet. And it's in an area where you can actually see wave breaking during the wintertime. So the buoys themselves, the pieces of equipment themselves that we put out there have to be really strong and hardened against wave processes, especially in the wintertime. So ideally, we would have had MET sensors on those buoys, as well as we have MET sensors on the other areas. But because of, you know, kind of the engineering compromises that we had to make for survivability during the wintertime, we were not able to put MET sensors on there, and we'll rely on some of the adjacent MET sensors, for example, at the end of the Newport Jetty off of Oregon to make up for that.
By MET, you mean meteorological?
I'm sorry, yeah, meteorological sensors.
Okay,
yeah.
just to check the weather around it, too. I get the sense that we know a lot about the ocean surface and a fair amount of the contours of the ocean floor, but we're missing a lot of stuff in the middle. Is that a fair characterization?
Yeah, that's really, really a good one. We're so used to looking at satellite images now, and they do a terrific job, in fact, covering the whole globe, but they only see a little ways down, maybe a meter or two. And we've mapped the ocean floor, again, using satellites and ships, but it's that part in the middle that we're trying to fill with instruments. You know, for 100 years we've been going out in ships, and we can be out there for, say, a couple of weeks to a month, but then you have to come in and reprovision, change the crew out, that kind of thing. And you can't perhaps be out in a big storm, so our idea and what we're doing with the Ocean Observatories Initiative is to be out there all the time so we can have those measurements through all those storms and all those big events.
I remember talking to meteorologists about Doppler radar when that appeared for the air several years ago, and they talked about it as slicing and dicing the air so they can know it better. Is this the same sort of thing within the ocean?
Yeah, so one of the things, we have something that's directly analogous to Doppler radar, which is Doppler sonar. So that Doppler sonar can look at, throughout the water column, you can look at the velocity variation through the water column, but you can also look at, using similar sonar technology, the amount of scatterers in the water column, which corresponds to, you know, the amount of biomass or the amount of small organisms at different levels in the water column.
How is all this paid for, and how long will the hardware last, given what the ocean can do to it?
So, but I'll take the sort of the planning and the pay and paying for it, and I'll hand off to Ed for the survivability part. So we've been planning this for actually over a decade. We sat in a meeting in 2004 with about 400 scientists and kind of planned this. And over those 10 years, we've been proposing to the National Science Foundation that this is something we need to do, and the Pacific Northwest is a terrific place to do this. So we convinced the National Science Foundation, who made a request of Congress, so this is taxpayer money, and we've been building the ray over the last 5 years. The total cost for both all of the Oregon and Washington hardware, the cabled array we've talked about, the East Coast, and a few other sites around the world ocean, is $385 million. That's the construction cost. And it's actually the largest civilian investment in observing the ocean, which we're pretty proud of, to have a big chunk of it in the Pacific Northwest informing, you know, what's going on here.
Mm-hmm. That is pretty impressive. We're looking forward to what comes from it. And what are the projections at Dever on how long the hardware might last, given the conditions in the ocean?
Right. So the projected lifetime of the Ocean Observatory's initiative is about 25 to 30 years. And the lifetimes of the individual pieces of hardware are going to be quite different than that. So, for example, the seabed cable, the telecoms cable that's been laid specifically for the Ocean Observatory's initiative and repurposed for or used for scientific observations, that's designed to last for the whole 30 years.
Okay. We hope to see great things coming out of the Ocean Observatory's initiative. Jack Barth is the project scientist on the Endurance Array. Ed Dever, the project manager. Gentlemen, thank you both for joining us on The Exchange today.
Great.
Thank you.
All right.